It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your hosts, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law here on the Talk Station, and we invite your calls. I hope that you will call in with your questions, and Cecil Harvell is with us. Hi, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Find your way out of the slushy driveway this morning?
I think we're going to be clear as of this afternoon. Yeah. That will be nice.
Yeah. All right. What are we talking about today?
Ben, last week, Wes and I discussed some general concepts as to litigation, and this week, Wes is on his way to a court proceeding this morning out of town, so I'm here, and glad to be here, by the way, and I'm going to discuss some of the concepts of fiduciary litigation, and I'm going to define that in a moment, but fiduciary litigation, Ben, is one of, if not the most, it is one of the most aggressive and fast growing areas of the law, substantive law. Certain law firms are having to hire additional lawyers to be able to handle kind of a flood of litigation cases surrounding the issues of fiduciary law. Now, fiduciary is a mighty big word. Which is a general word, if you will, for anyone who is responsible for the property of another. And so a fiduciary would be an agent under a power of attorney. A fiduciary would be an executor or administrator of an estate. A fiduciary would be a trustee of a trust. All of these appointments, if you will, are valid, and they are a challenge to an individual, or sometimes a corporation can serve as in a fiduciary capacity, but they are a valid appointment and delegation of the property of another. And that right there tells you that you're dealing with facts and circumstances that can be very ripe for disagreement or misunderstanding, for lack of accountability, for undue influence, all of those kinds of lack of communication.
Fraud
and abuse. The list is really just endless. And so, of course, you know, some of this is going to ring a little bit of a bell with our listeners out there this morning. Even though this is a big word, fiduciary, and even though we're talking about it applying in many different contexts, the bottom line is it's difficult to find a family that has not been exposed to some sort of circumstance where someone in their family, either through an estate or a power of attorney or something of that nature, has been responsible, and a brother or sister have questioned it a little bit.
Right.
So here we go, Ben. Now, when we are dealing with our own property, our stocks, our bonds, our real property, our land, our boat slips, whatever the case might be, we're able to more or less captain our own ship.
Right.
If we make a decision that's not quite the right decision, well, you know, we might lose a little sleep over it, but there really isn't any consequence. That's just the way the chips fell. When you're dealing with property of another, there is a heightened duty, if you will, and the chips don't just simply fall many times like they do when we make our own mistake with our own property. We really do have a heightened obligation as a fiduciary to guard, to safeguard, and to make prudent decisions, reasonable person decisions, relative to the property of another. So what are some examples of this? We have executors right now, this very week, that are qualifying as executor under their, let's just go ahead and say, their parents' will. And they have a large stock portfolio that is going to pass, let's say, four ways to themselves and their three siblings. The stock market, as we know right now, is at an all-time high.
Mm-hmm.
There also is discussion about the fact that we could have a correction
mm-hmm.
in the stock market.
Right.
And none of us hold a crystal ball. Now, you, Ben, as an individual, are allowed to just kind of float the boat.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to just say,
buy,
well,
sell, trade.
What's going to happen is going to
mm-hmm.
happen.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just going to hold right mm-hmm. now. But when you are an executor of an estate, you don't have that privilege. I mean, if you're holding on to a large stock portfolio, and what is large is relative, that's always a relative term to, mm-hmm. to facts and circumstances. But let's just say $500,000, and that's what it's valued the first of this week.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the executor of the estate, and that $500,000 is going to be divided five ways. Each child is going to get $100,000, let's say. Then what if the stock market, you know, next week, while that is still in the name of the parent, has a, you know, 20-30% correction,
mm-hmm.
one of those kinds of corrections that we have historically seen, and a $500,000 portfolio kind of overnight becomes a, you know, $350,000 portfolio.
Right.
That's a big loss. So one of the questions that an executor has to ask themselves in this environment, this stock market environment, and this applies to all sorts of assets, but I think the stock market one is one that's kind of easy to just grasp a hold of this
mm-hmm.
morning, is, you know, is the stock going to be just sold and divided between the children? Is that
right.
what they're going to do?
Right.
And that's a question that most people know pretty soon. And if that is the case, then, you know, let's get to it
mm-hmm.
because the stock market is at an all-time high, and it would be nice to liquidate at an all-time high and distribute to the children. They then can make the decision what they want to do mm-hmm. with their particular share. So that's a good example, Ben, of the difference between an individual with their own property and a fiduciary with the property of another.
And, but the question mm-hmm, comes up, sure. though, with a fiduciary like that, is maybe there may be the estate may have some bills. And so does that, when that liquidates the stock market, does that go into the account of the estate before
yeah,
it gets distributed?
It does. And yeah. certainly the bills are going to have to be paid if there
right.
are bills. But usually, as we all would think, someone with a $500,000 portfolio, they might have a few bills around the house that have to be paid,
mm-hmm.
catch up a little bit on a few credit cards and, you know, the bill household bills. But they're not $500,000 in debt.
Right.
Or else
right.
they wouldn't have the $500,000 portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, Ben, I know some of our listeners might not find this too applicable, but I mean, we see clients with $2, $3, and $4 million portfolios.
Right, right.
So imagine, you know, a 20-30% correction on portfolios mm-hmm. of that nature.
Yes, that's right.
And those are probably more the files that I'm actually speaking
mm-hmm.
about in terms of the executor really does have to be on guard
mm-hmm.
and needs to move with those files in a prompt way. The same is true with regard to real property. You know, when do you sell it?
Mm-hmm.
you know, do you need to refinance certain business property at a lower interest rate? All the decisions that we as individuals have to make with regard to our own properties, an executor or a power of attorney, an agent under a power of attorney has those same kinds of decisions to make, but they have to do what is known as the prudent the reasonable person would do,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of like the vote of the majority, if
mm-hmm.
you will. If we had, you know, five people in the room, how would they all vote with regard to the liquidation of the stock
right.
or the selling of that real property? Well, if the vote is 3 or 4 to 1,
mm-hmm.
then probably it would be said that the reasonable person would make that decision. And so that is the standard that is applied. And of course, you know, it's always easy to, you know, hindsight is 20/20.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, there can be easy, it's ripe area, as we can imagine, for disagreement when a fiduciary makes a decision such as this.
But and just say, just to be a little facetious, the fiduciary decides to liquidate everything and then invest it all in typewriter manufacturing. The other parties that might have something to say about that and might want to litigate at that point.
Well, they absolutely would, and I don't think that, you know, a fiduciary would be difficult to find
to justify
circumstances
that.
Where that would not be a violation of fiduciary duty to do something of that nature. Now, you know, in the power of attorney context, the new language effective 2018 is agent.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time under a power of attorney, you know, it was very confusing because the agent was called an attorney in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And many people got that confused with, you know, an attorney such as myself. And that language just wasn't as clear as it could be.
Mm-hmm.
I think the North Carolina legislature has done a good job of clearing up some of the language ambiguity. And it's now just called the agent,
mm-hmm.
which, of course, is what someone is under a power of attorney. Now, in this situation, Ben, you can only imagine we see circumstances where folks under the power of attorney change the registration on the bank accounts.
Right. Right.
Okay, to make a $100,000 CD joint with survivorship or payable on death to them,
mm-hmm.
okay? Or we see them make a decision about selling a property without consulting. I'm talking about a piece of land now or investment property, family farm, something of that nature, without really consulting with the other siblings
mm-hmm.
Or heirs who are going to inherit that property. The rule, the general rule for an agent under a power of attorney is kind of a kind of float the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Maintain as much as you can the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, clearly, if there's an asset that is at risk, then there's something to do. But to make some sort of drastic move with the assets of another under a power of attorney, that's a little bit different than a liquidation under an estate.
All right. We'll have more to come in just a moment. If you'd like to join us, 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. Just call Kinsey and she'll put you through, and we'll talk more about your legal life on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, online at harvellandcollins.com. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And Cecil Harvell is with us here today. So we're talking about power of attorney.
We are. So an agent under a power of attorney, again, is a fiduciary. And this person is going to be required to keep very accurate records. They're going to be required to act in the most upstanding way concerning the property of their parent,
right.
their grandparent, their close friend down the street, their church member, whatever their relationship happens to be with the principal, who, after all, trusts them, relies on them, depends on them by naming them the agent in their power of attorney. This person now is going to have to step up to the plate and really govern themselves in a very reasonable way. They're not going to be able to make, fast decisions and decisions that are, you know, not well thought out. Maybe, you know, properties have to be sold consistent with appraisals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, Ben, I mean, if you own a lot somewhere in Carteret County and you want to sell it for $25,000, that's your business.
That's right. But if it's not yours.
But if you're a power of attorney, you're an agent under a power of attorney, you got to have something to back up that $25,000 lot price.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the appraisal? You need some other documentation to substantiate your, quote, fiduciary decision. So you need to keep accurate records. And of course, one of the things that we see so often are cash, checks written out to cash. These are checks written out directly to the agent under the power of attorney.
Right.
It's okay to be reimbursed as the agent under the power of attorney, but you need the underlying documentation that substantiates why you are being reimbursed. And checks to cash are always subject to question. The best thing to do there is if you must write a cash check, is to, you know, either put on the check in the memo line what that cash is for, or keep a side record ledger where you mention that, yes, on January the 5th, I cashed a check for $500, but it went to the following places or to the following people or for the following things or items, things of that nature. Again,
okay.
Record keeping is very important. Now, all of these kinds of reasonable standards also exist for a trustee under a trust. He or she, as trustee, must guard the property, safeguard the property, keep it insured, keep it maintained, not allow it to go into what we lawyers call waste. If you own a property in a trust, then you're going to need to maintain that property. Again, now not with your own personal monies, but with assets that are hopefully within the trust that were set aside to be able to maintain that property. And if you are holding on to property in a trust that is of a liquid form, again, back to that, you know, that stock portfolio, examples that we started out with today.
Right.
Then again, you're going to have to talk to some investment advisors. You're going to have to seek some advice as to whether or not the quote $1 million portfolio, you know, or $500,000 portfolio or whatever the amount might be, is it properly, you know, diversified? Is it properly maintained? These are questions that you're going to have to seek out and seek answers to. You also are responsible for all of the tax filings for your principal, for the grantor of the trust, for the principal of the power of attorney, for the decedent of the estate. You as the agent, you as the fiduciary, now step into their shoes, and you are now responsible to the North Carolina Department of Revenue and to the Internal Revenue Service. And by the way, with regard to taxing authorities, if you miss a beat on that, you can be held personally responsible, because there is absolutely expectation by the IRS and by the Department of Revenue for the fiduciary to file the appropriate returns.
Okay, we'll take a short break. We'll come back in just a moment here with more from Cecil Harvell and Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. You can always make your appointment with them by giving them a call at 252-726-9050. They're 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and lots of information is available online, including past shows at harvellandcollins.com, and we'll have more in just a minute. And welcome back here in Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And Cecil Harvell with us. We're talking about fiduciary litigation. So I guess really in our last 5 minutes or so, we will maybe look at what happens when there are problems.
Well, that's right, Ben. And, of course, you know, when any of these examples that I've given this morning, you know, play out in the real world, we can only imagine how it lays a foundation for it to be ripe for there to be disagreement.
Right.
I mean, if you don't liquidate the stock portfolio and you lose a couple of $100,000, someone might be upset about that.
Yeah.
If you sell the property for less than the appraised value, because you think you have to, in order to, for whatever reason, you might think that you have to sell it because you have to receive more cash to care for your elder parent. But if you sell it for less than the fair market value, again, someone could be upset about this. And so each and every one of these examples many times has a consequence. And the consequence is that someone who is also vested in the property. They're not usually the fiduciary, mm-hmm. per se, but they are a beneficiary. They are someone who eventually will have rights to the property. They now will bring a lawsuit against someone who has, you know, maybe unduly influenced the principal, someone who has defrauded the principal in some mm-hmm. way, someone who has changed these bank accounts or assets around to benefit them, sold property for less than fair market value, self-dealing mm-hmm. with regard to certain properties. All of these issues are out there. And of course, if the facts are right and the circumstances are right, then we can absolutely anticipate that there will be the beginnings of a conflict, which then, of course, draws the parties into substantive litigation.
Now, and sometimes it may rise to a level of a criminal offense, but a lot of what you're dealing with, though, is going to
arise to a criminal offense. It also, in the area of a power of attorney, there can be allegations of elder abuse.
Right.
And there can be then reports to the Department of Social Services to the Adult Protective Unit, mm-hmm. which will go out and investigate, and find out, hey, what really is going on here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this child has the power of attorney, but yet, you know, the elder parent is being kept, you know, under horrible conditions. Et cetera, not well fed. Her medications are not being attended to. Her doctor's appointments are being skipped. Her mail is not being opened.
Mm-hmm.
These are some files that we also, unfortunately, you know, Ben, see. And of course, as I mentioned before, the taxing authorities. So, you know, all eyes are on
mm-hmm.
when you are an executor, a trustee, an agent under a power of attorney. You really do have a heightened obligation
mm-hmm.
to handle those affairs. And we're in our last little 30 seconds here, Ben. Go see a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Ask some questions if you are in one of these positions. Better to ask a question and get some advice from a good lawyer about your duties as executor, your duties as agent under power of attorney. Go ask some simple questions and get some answers. And do it before there is, you know, circumstances and facts that will lead to conflict.
Yes, and this extends beyond where you may need legal advice. It extends beyond just a state matter. So you may be a treasurer, a church treasurer, a nonprofit, you know, fire department, any number of other things, mm-hmm. and you're concerned that there may be some irregularities.
Whenever you are dealing with the property of another,
mm-hmm.
you're in a circumstance where you need to have a heightened awareness.
Okay. All right. If you want to find out more, too, you want to call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, you can give them a call, again, at 252-726-9050, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, and online at harvellandcollins.com.